Hello, I'm Badis, and welcome to the Implement Podcast. This is a podcast where we have great conversations about marketing, growing brands, and what it takes to be a great marketer. If you're interested in keeping up with the podcast episodes and the amazing content we produce at Implement, you should definitely subscribe to our newsletter. Just go to join-implement.com to subscribe. All right, enough self-promo, let's dive into this new episode, and thanks again for tuning in. Welcome to a new episode of the Implement Podcast. My guest today is Chris Clementi. Chris is a director of online marketing at WebMD. Thank you so much for joining me today, Chris. Could you tell us a bit more about yourself?
Thank you for having me. Sure. My name is Chris Clementi. I'm the online marketing director at Medscape WebMD. I'm part of the professional service unit of WebMD. We cater to healthcare professionals, doctors, nurses, RNs, people like that, across a multitude of specialties, ranging from anywhere between oncology and neurology and PCPs to plastic surgery and transplantation. So we cover a full gamut. And I oversee the channels that make up newsletter, app notifications, and online marketing. And I've been with the company now for about going on 6 years now.
Wow. So you guys are sort of a media, right? You're a media for medical profession in general.
Yeah, we're media and we're a publication. So we have a robust editorial staff. We have a robust library of articles that deals with a whole array of topics, as you could imagine. And in particular, nowadays, our COVID source has been a big popular source. And given the circumstances, it is interesting to kind of have a pulse on that because there's so much awareness and attention going on. So it's nice to know that we're giving resources to the professionals and the frontline workers that are doing their best nowadays. Yeah,
that's awesome. You know, I heard of WebMD, obviously, like I think it's quite well known, but I didn't know you guys made so much traffic. Like I checked your traffic, it's like on average 134 million visits per month. Yep. Is that approximately that, you know, it's huge. Like I didn't know it was so big.
Yeah, no, we do a lot, especially on the consumer side, what people know as WebMD. We get a ton of traffic, and then just multiply that for the professional side. And we're growing over the last 2 years or so. We've acquired multiple affiliates, and we've been growing on the OUS or the global stand front of WebMD. So we're increasing our editorial staff, but also increasing our markets as well.
That's really impressive. And you get this traffic mainly from like what are the main sources?
We get a bit of organic traffic from our audiences, but we dive into paid market, social app. We have our own family of apps that we gain traffic from. We do quite a bit of alerts and notifications through those apps. We rely heavily on our SEO. And we do a lot of paid reach through SEO. So we have our hand in a lot of buckets, if you will. Yeah.
It's really impressive. And so you are the on the professional kind of services side of things. Mm-hmm. What are the sort of the traffic sources there? Because you have, it's two separate businesses, right? You have the consumer side and you have the, so what are the same traffic sources for the professional side?
Yep, same traffic sources. We rely heavily on our app, our site, our pushes, but also our newsletter, the channels that I oversee. We have a third of our traffic coming in from newsletters alone, and we have a multitude of products. And where that's kind of the big thing that we're doing nowadays is revamping our channel so that it's more algo driven, it's more automated, it's more personalized. Because it's not a shocker, and a lot of companies are finding this out. But if you have more relevant content to those that are are reading and seeing that content, you're going to get more engagement. So for us, tying in more relevant content towards someone's specialty, and not just their specialty, but also their subspecialty, right? So if we're talking about oncology, it's not enough to give a lung cancer specialist a broad array of oncology resources. You want to make sure that they're getting lung cancer subtopics. So making sure that we're looking at lead concepts and relative concepts and driving our newsletters. In particular, I'm looking at two behaviors that they're affiliated on the site. We're seeing that our engagement is increasing 10 times, 20 times as much, you know, as we did in the past.
Because you have a more segmented approach and you're building more specific content, right?
Yep, we're segmented approach, but also we're really looking at their behavior. So we accommodate for bursts, we accommodate for trends. So especially now with COVID, right? We're trying to find that happy balance, right? Because there's also the opposite side of that, which is COVID fatigue. We certainly have enough COVID content, but if we're giving that content, as we were in the beginning days of lockdown, we were giving almost daily content. And then sure enough, that stops, you know, and then it kind of has its peaks and valleys. So we want to make sure that we're looking at a user level strategy where we can look at their behaviors and accommodate for those bursts and anticipate too. There's a lot of predictive intelligence that we're looking at too, where we can predict where they're going to read and where they're going to be most engaged next.
Yeah. Sounds really interesting. Do you have any tools you're working with to do this, or is it built like internal tools, or are you?
Yeah, it's a mixture. We do have internal tools. We have internal teams. Our parent company, Internet Brands, they have a robust staff of data scientists that are actually creating and revamping algorithms on a daily basis. But we also make use of other in-home tools that we've built over the course of the years. We have an internal tool for our editorial staff to deploy newsletters and to do A/B testing on. So that's been very helpful. But as far as a data mechanism, we rely heavily on Adobe Omniture and Site Catalyst. We also look at Tableau and make big usage of their dashboards. And we also use our email platform, which is Salesforce ExactTarget. So we look at the features that we have in there. We make use of our email studio or automation studio. And we also make use of the Einstein environment as well. Yeah.
Sounds really impressive. It's a solid stack, you know, for...
it's a lot, you know, there's a lot and our parent company, you know, definitely has a build not buy approach. So, you know, even talking now, we're finding ways as which we can consolidate our vendors and to see how we can potentially make a homegrown solution for that, you know, so having that proprietary, handle on our tools is of big importance to us. Yeah,
that's amazing. I mean, that's definitely not the average stack of the average company your size. I mean, it's quite impressive, really.
Yeah. I mean, we're trying, and certainly we have a ways to go to kind of be solely a build environment. But sometimes it doesn't always fit, right? Sometimes we don't want to jam a square peg into a round hole. So sometimes having a vendor at our disposal is helps us out quite a bit. And we certainly have an attitude where we don't want to just hire vendors just for the sake of. We want to make sure that we're building a partnership and relationship with them. So we've been with Salesforce for quite some time. We've developed relationships with Braze for app, and we've developed a lot of relationships over the years. And luckily, we have a good cadence with those that we work with. So that's important for me as someone who's kind of managing those relationships. I want to make sure that we are a dedicated resource for them that we know our reps by name so that we can not just be a number. So, you know, that's something that we do on a weekly basis. We have touch bases and we have reports going out, and, you know, it kind of makes full circle, you know, at the end of the day, and we have a bigger transparency because of it.
That's like, there are two things I want to talk about a bit more, because it's the first thing is about the sort of the predictive content approach. Like, I've recently talked to someone on the tech side, on the product side at Salesforce, mm-hmm. that was on the podcast. It's not published yet, but we talked about predictive analytics for marketers, and we kind of struggle to see like how much impact, I mean, it's going to have, especially talking about IA, IA and AI, sorry. And we actually thought about the predictive push, like the being able to understand what people are going to engage with next is like, is really something that, but my question really is like, how real is it, and how close are you to real results with this? Is it just still like a dream out there, something that we're going to get to, or are you actually driving results from analyzing all that data and doing real like AI work and predictive analytics work? Like how does it work, and are you getting really results from it?
Mm-hmm. No, that's a good question, and I wish there was a more black and white answer to that. But I think it also depends on the company, right? I think there's a lot of companies out there where predictive intelligence is their present, and for us, it's still our future. You know, like going from a more static approach to a more automated, personalized approach in regards to AI. Is something that's still in the works, and that's something that we won't be fully on 100% predictive model until, you know, 2-3 years, I would predict at this point. Yeah. And it's something that we're trying to balance. For us, you know, being a publication company, there's a huge reliance on human curation and human resource. We have editors all over the world that's curating content for the site, for our newsletters, for our apps. And to say that we're going to completely switch over to a predictive model, it's not an easy task. There's something about that person curation process that shouldn't be glossed over and overlooked. Because at the end of the day, when we're creating those predictive models with our teams, we want to curate a process or create a process within those algorithms that mimic the human state of mind. So it's easier said than done. But we're there, we're working towards it. So it's very much our present. And that's something that's new for us. You know, I want to say that we really kicked it into full gear this year, but we've been working with algorithms and predictive models for the last couple of years. But this year in particular, you know, the term used in office is the radical approach to AI and to predictive modeling. So whereas before we were doing testing 2-3 newsletters at a time, now we want to try to multiply that and do 30 newsletters, 100 newsletters, and be in a position where our email channel in particular takes a full automated approach. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how realistic is that? I think there's always going to be a need for human curation. And, you know, it's nice to know that, you know, in the near future, the robots won't fully take over our jobs too. There's something to be said about that. And I think we're going to just work, you know, part in part. I think the shift is going to be more towards not necessarily the marketing aspect. You know, it's more towards the data and how we're going to analyze that data. And I think that's really where the role of the marketer is going to be, where we're going to be put in a position where we have to work smarter instead of harder, right? So leave the hard work to the algorithm, but really analyze and have more of that right brain to look at that data. And I think that's where the challenge is. I think everyone kind of labels themselves as left brain or right brain, but I think there's a point now where especially the marketer has to kind of meet in the middle and really take a analytic approach to data and take a more serious look at data. Because really we're living in interesting times where we can do this at a rapid pace. We can, you know, take our channel and automize it 100% if we wanted to. But in doing so, we're going to be looking at large amounts of data, especially for a company like Medscape WebMD, where, you know, we're getting, you know, a million table rows of data a day just by looking at what's going in out of newsletters, what's going in out of app, page views and new users and sessions that we're looking at the site. So because of that volume, it's going to be overwhelming for someone who doesn't have that mindset to look at data. And data could be overanalyzed and perceived as incorrect too. So we want to make sure that we are at a good spot where we are looking at numbers, we're confident at those numbers, and we understand the trends that exist. So it's been kind of the mission of us right now to get everyone to that spot. And I think we're not there yet. I think I think that's a good spot to be. I don't think you ever want to be at 100% confident in that you're running at full speed with automation, because there's always something else that you could do. So I think we're getting to that point. And it's nice to see that we've had exponential growth in trying to get to that goal. So this year's definitely a big year for us. Yeah.
So thank you so much for this answer. It was, it was really interesting listening to this. So if I understand what you're saying is that with predictive intelligence, we're not there yet, and we probably won't be there. I mean, in terms of full automation, what it could be used for right now is, you know, analyzing the data at least, and at least be on the sort of that side of the value chain, and understanding the trends and getting the all the insights we can from the data we already have. But the part where a machine is going to take the next step and maybe start automating the editorial side of things is still a long way to go. Is that sort of
I mean, and it is going to be a challenge for some time. And it's not, when I say challenge, I don't mean it to be a bad thing, because I do think that we're always going to need each part. We're always going to need that human curation, that human editorial team alongside the algo team, the automation. And we could see it within the company too. You know, editors, I think in the past had a very content driven mindset, whereas now we're seeing that editors are asking for data and asking to look at engagement, look at metrics, look at this data and be updated with this data on a very frequent schedule. So it's kind of interesting to see that shift in mindset.
Yeah.
And it's good to see that people are up for that challenge. Because of that, I think we'll never be at 100%. I would say within the next, 2 to 5 years, especially. Who knows where we'll be in the next 10 years. Everything is just, accelerating and at such a rapid pace. But we're there. We're on track, and I think we're on track for tremendous amount of growth. Yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting topic, because I'm really into this lately, and especially the topic of data. Where would someone learn about all this as a marketer? Because you have the opportunity of being, hands-on with this at your job, and so you get to work with quite advanced tools, and you probably get some training around this, but how do you sort of learn all this? Because as you said, like most marketers, if you throw at them terabytes of data, they're not data scientists. They don't know how to what to do with it. And I'm the first one to say this, like I'm still learning a lot about this. So how do you learn about this, and how do you sort of can you learn it on your own, or is it something you absolutely need to have in your day job?
Yeah, I think it's something that you could take a self-initiative to learn. Like any job, I think you have to be adaptive to what's going on in today's industry. So I think if you didn't have the mindset that you were going to adapt, you're just going to get eaten by the wolves. But you could easily, you know, not fully comprehend how to analyze data on your own. I always like to learn from people, learn and really make use of your teams. You know, the larger the company, a lot of times the more siloed you are. It's kind of contradictive, you know, like it's, you would expect, you know, with such a big company that we're all kind of collaborating together, but we have our own agendas. We have our own goals to meet. We have our own prerogatories. So priorities, I should say. But, you know, we should find our shareholders and really meet up with them and learn the most that we can from each other. Like I mentioned, you know, we're looking a lot at data, and because of that, we're hiring and we're looking at resources that are data driven. So we've been hiring a lot more data scientists, a lot more data analysts. We're investing more in our business intelligence teams. So I would say make great use out of those people. Develop a relationship with them. When you make a request, you know, just don't throw it to them. You know, really try to comprehend it with them and understand where those gaps are. If you have questions, reach out to those people. So really make use of the resources that you have. And then as far as resources that you get on your own, I would say make use of the vendors that you work with. It's very tempting, and you know, I've been guilty with it, my team's been guilty with it. You know, once you're in a platform, it's almost like tunnel vision and you just work, but sometimes we don't find the opportunities in our daily lives and our working lives to actually learn the platform and learn the reports that are generated, and just take a breath, take time, and actually learn your platform. And I think that's critical. So really utilize the resources within the platform that you're using, within the vendor relationship that you have, and see what other resources you have out there. Being in email marketing and newsletter marketing, you know, there's a lot of additional resources. I make great use of Litmus, Campaign Monitor. Those are two organizations that, you know, when people ask me, who do I go to? Like, they're kind of the holy grail, you know, of resources. So, and I've, you know, developed relationships with those people in those companies. And they're just the quality of information, best practices that you can get from them. You know, just really read, make use of it, interact with them. You know, that's the beauty of today's environment. You know, we're just really a click away. We're really just an email or a comment away from just getting real answers from real people. So make use of what's out there. Yeah,
absolutely. You know, the thing is, especially with data. So my theory is that marketers are soon going to be sort of one third software developer, in the sense, because you know, you need to be extra agile with digital and, you know, launching apps and websites and things like that. One third data scientist and a one third marketer, like in the classic sense, you know, copywriting, et cetera, et cetera. But the thing is, if you want to learn about those things, so software developer, okay, like no code tools, no code, like, you know, Bubble, Webflow, all the automation tools, et cetera, they make it really easy for you to do what a software developer had to do, like, you know, 5 years ago. You needed to go through the product team to do those things. Now you can do them with a lot of no-code tools, and it's a booming area. And I think marketers will be expected to learn this. But the data side, I feel like to go to the next step is really like you need to step into the world of data science, almost. Like there's no like a bridge between these two worlds of marketing and data, And it's very hard for a marketer who doesn't have the resources of a large company, doesn't have access to like a data science team or, very large vendors who train and who spend time, et cetera. It's very hard to learn it on your own, I think.
No, absolutely. It's funny you were talking, and it reminds me of my background. So my background is actually in web development and web design. Initially, I was a graphic designer and front-end developer. And soon enough, you know, you realize that you can't just be siloed in that one element of technology. Because, you know, then you had to kind of understand data structures even back then. And I'm dating myself, you know, 15, 20 years now. But, you know, you had to know a little bit about SQL. You need to know a little bit about back-end development. And then the mobile revolution happened, and all of a sudden you have to learn about responsive design and mobile design. And it adapts with you. And if you don't adapt, you're going to fall short. So sure enough, you know, a front-end developer becomes this hybrid of a front-end back-end developer. And nowadays they're called full stack developers. So, you know, it's part of, I think, this trend of making use of your resources, right? So many people want to get into technology. They want to be engaged. And I think, technology culture has been embraced so much where people just want to gain that exposure. And they really don't care how much they're getting paid. They don't really care about, you know, what their title is. They just care about creating and developing. And I think to a certain degree, industries have taken advantage of that and have created these fuller stack developers where, you know, they can get a front end developer, back end developer, data analyst, and, you know, bucket it into one, in one position, you know. So there's that, but I think that's kind of the attitude now with every type of a position and role that's out there, including marketers. You know, now being a marketer, you know, same thing I'm finding where it's, you can't just, you know, you can't just have an idea of what your user wants and kind of play around with that. You need to have that insight on data. You need to test. You need to be, like you said, part marketer, part data analyst, part data scientist, part engineer in so many ways, and part designer. You know, so there's all these facets that make up roles nowadays that didn't exist, you know, not even 15, 20 years ago. So we were pretty much siloed back in the day, but now, you know, we are kind of coming together and have to wear multiple hats.
You know? Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree. And I love the way you put it, because I think, and I don't know if it's a good news or a bad news, but I think for a lot of professions out there dealing with technology, especially, when I say we, I mean like stakeholders, the bosses, you know, the heads of departments, etc. They're going to expect much more out of a marketer than like 10 years ago. Like they're going to expect a lot more automation, a lot more productivity, because all of this leads to what? To more productivity. Like if you if you're able to automate so much work currently, like you could really like do so much more now with very fewer like hours of work put in. People are going to expect a lot more. So how is it going to look like in 10, 15 years? I don't know. Like maybe you'll have two people departments with with like a huge stack of automation. And I don't know, but it's, I don't know if it's a good news or bad news. I don't know.
That's good. I don't think we can fully comprehend it until we're actually, and especially now, with the pandemic, and it's unfortunate that it took a pandemic to make us realize how much we can do remotely. But I think now that we're in this culture now where we're embracing remote work even more so than ever, and actually companies are making an initiative now to have permanent remote time jobs, I think that's going to shift everything too. How long we work, how much we work, how many roles we're going to kind of fit into one role. I think it's all going to change. And, you know, we never really thought something like this would happen, but now that we're in it, I think there's still more that has to come to kind of get us to a point where we fully understand where we're going to be with remote work and how we're going to handle that. But, you know, it's something that I think, especially for a younger generation of marketers, but also developers that are coming of age, I think it's expected. You know, it's not, people are demanding it, but there's this level of expectation that, you know, we can work from home. Yes, we can, you know, have a flexible schedule of working. And yes, because of that, we can work more. We can do more. So where does that leave compensation? Where does that leave the resource? So I think a lot's going to change pretty rapidly. It's going to be very interesting once we, quote unquote, go to normal, what that normal is going to be.
Yeah. I can't wait to see it because honestly, like it's the what a marketer is when I started working in the field not so long ago, because I didn't start my career that long ago, and what it looks like now is already a big change. So I really can't wait to see how automation and how no code, how the literacy in data is gonna really like multiply the productivity of every marketer. And but I think there's a big gap in the literacy side of things. Like we do have tools, we do have automation capacities, we do have much more data than before, but do people know how to use it and how to leverage it? And there's a skill gap there that is absolutely huge, but you know, that's another discussion. But it's definitely I think the next step is going to be just getting everyone to speed on everything, and especially the, you know, tech and data. So it's going really fast. So, but it's we'll see. I guess we'll see.
Yes, that's all we can do. Is embrace for impact.
So you're managing you're managing the newsletter for the professional services and the so you're on the email side of things. How big is your database, and how, you know, how big is the audience you're taking care of?
I mean that varies between specialty, but you know, we're looking at right now about 22 million users, and that encompasses HCPs and MDs. We target around now more than 500,000 US MDs alone. So, you know, each specialty varies with who's registered for that specialty. If you take, like, for example, a PCP, someone who's in internal and family medicine, that's one of our largest specialties. And that alone has nearly 400,000 registered users. So it all varies. And then you have something that could be smaller, like oncologists. You know, our database, I believe, is like 15,000 active oncologists, but they can vary, you know. And what we find is that they're very temperamental, you know. So if, like, going back to that example with lung cancer, if you have a breast cancer specialist who gets lung cancer content, we've seen that they are quick to opt out, you know, whereas a PCP, it's so broad that they'll take anything, pretty much. They'll take the oncology content, they'll take the cardio content, because they're specialized in a broad range of things. So they're more forgiving, and actually they're more engaged because they want to find out more. So it all varies. But we typically look at, we have a full database about 23 million users. And we have, you know, we have a million point five registered doctors in the US. And that's not considering our global units and our global audiences. But you know, typically if you want to see from an email perspective, from year to year, you know, we send about 1 billion emails per month, 1 billion newsletters per month. Yeah. I'm sorry, not per month, per year. billion newsletters per year. So we send out a lot of
Yeah, I can see that. I can't even imagine what a billion emails looks like. So I can.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot. And if you look at our newsletter calendar, you know, we make fun because it looks like a Christmas tree because we color code it by email product, by specialty. So it looks like Christmas all year round.
I want to sort of, wrap up the episode where we're getting close to the end of our time together, but it's, I can't imagine like 1 billion per year. It sounds like ridiculously high for me. Like I've never been working with that scale of emailing. But what are sort of your go-to, like, or your top tips, you know, on email marketing, things that you've learned over the years, you've working with such a large base, how do you sort of, how would you advise someone starting to work with on a large base like this? What would you tell them to pay attention to?
Yeah. All good questions. It's probably hard to believe since we do send out a billion per year, but I would say less is more. So meaning, you know, I think we, especially working with other marketers, there's this need, this compelling instinct to just send out that newsletter and get whatever engagement you can sometimes. But, you know, the negative impact, the opt-out, has far more consequence than the slight increase in open rate or unique click-through rate that you might get in a newsletter. So if you're pitted up against that Sophie's choice of do we just send for the sake of sending, or not. And also if you're competing, you know, like I said, we have a robust calendar that, you know, we're sending out, you know, throughout the course of the day. So if you find that you're competing with other newsletters, competing with other teams, you know, keep in mind too, like within WebMD, I'm just one email team. We also have a promo side and a CME, a continuing medical education side. And then there's the WebMD side too. So, you know, there's a lot of email going out. So I would say, you know, when in doubt, don't send it unless it's for sure going to be very compelling and very relevant and personal to that user, because the negative will certainly outperform any positive that you can get in that circumstance. And then the second big thing would be to test, you know, test. Especially now that we are full throttle with personalization and algorithm learning, AI learning. We don't know what the right answer is. We don't know what the right frequency is a lot of times. We're constantly pushing thresholds. So we want to make sure that we're testing with a small audience, that we're learning from that, and that we're expanding based off of a strategic schedule, a strategic calendar. So making sure that you have a test plan, making sure that you have 10-10-80 or A-B tests that have a clear beginning, middle, and end, and that you are changing one variable at a time, not getting ahead of yourself. I think that's key to making sure that you're going to a more engaged group and gaining that overall traffic for your channel.
Yeah, it's exciting stuff. I think the I loved when you talked about the sort of the opt out being being a serious consequence of just rushing, that you shouldn't, like, you know, kind of bargain take that risk, and it's absolutely true, and I love it.
Like I said, like, don't take anything that you send out personally. You know, like I've said this before, like, you know, a lot and we work with editors, and they're the ones that are producing or working around that content, you know, those articles on the site. So sometimes we get emotional towards the content. I'm like, don't get emotional, you know, have faith that we're producing good quality work, and then let business be business. Like, do the testing, let go of your babies, let go of your children, and let the data speak for itself.
Yeah. I love this. This is amazing, Chris. Thank you so much for sharing all this. Where can we follow you online?
You can follow me. I'm Christopher, you can go to my my profile at cclementi.com. I have my profile there. I'm also on LinkedIn, Christopher Clementi. And you can also look at medscape.com for great medical content.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.